Columbia Morning on News Talk 1400 KFRU. Friday morning, we're going to tackle a very tough subject and a difficult subject for the next several moments. And it's with the author of a book that is called Hurt, Chronicles of the Drug War Generation. And my author is a sociologist, and she has written this book. She is associate professor of sociology at Bentley University, been researching on ethnographic studies of drug user populations and alternatives to incarceration for quite some time, receiving funding from the National Institute on Drug Abuse, which is part of the National Institutes of Health. Her name is Miriam Boeri, and she joins us right now. It's good to talk to you. Thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is very personal to you, as I saw in your book and I read in your book, you had a brother who struggled with this. And so was that the time when you started to say, I really want to dedicate a good portion of my professional career on the research of drugs?
No, not at all. No, my brother was a classic, went from prescription pills to heroin, but he did this when he was very young, in 12 years old, he started prescription pills. And this was back in the 1960s. So what we're seeing today is a replication of what was going on many years ago, and I saw in my brother's life. So I didn't start studying this myself until I went to graduate school and was looking for a topic for a dissertation. And somebody who had a grant from NIH, the National Institutes of Drug Abuse, asked me to be part of their study and go out and look for people who were using heroin to interview. And it turned out I was pretty good at this, because having a brother who had been using heroin literally all his life, he was in and out of jail and prison, mainly for trying to support his heroin use. I seemed to be very good at talking to people about their lives.
When you talk to them, one of the things that I saw early in your book is that when you would ask them, so how did you end up in this situation? I don't know exactly how you would phrase the question, but basically you were asking them, what do you attribute this to? You made the point that none of them, I think you said none of them said, well, it's because of societal situations or the culture around me. All of them kind of took personal responsibility for this. But you, I think, indicated that they kind of missed these other factors that were influencing them.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I look at their whole lives, so I didn't really focus on the drugs itself. I focused on their life trajectory, the pathway they took through their life. And they were the ones that brought up, you know, this is my fault, it's all on me, I've got to take care of this, I don't blame anyone else. But then you saw in their life that they had these turning points, we call them. So something would happen in their life, for example, you know, divorce when they were young with their parents, and they were split between which parent to be with, and that traumatized them in some way. Many of them were sexually abused because perhaps by a boyfriend of their parent, or their own boyfriends or girlfriends. And as you went through their lives, you saw that there were these turning points in their lives that they sought some help, and they didn't get it, and they did find help in some kind of drugs. Others, though, would be given a prescription drug in their life and felt that this made them feel better about their lives. Most of them were alienated. Most of them had problems that we all have in life. But at that moment, at that place and time, they found drugs, took care of that problem, or made them forget about it.
You point out that when we started, and you call this in your title, the drug war generation. So that would be reminiscent, many of us would remember, when we started hearing about the war on drugs. Mm-hmm. What was the role of that so-called war on drugs in what you saw happening in that generation?
Yes, well, I'm glad you asked me, because the reason I looked at older drug users who were 45 to 65 is to get their whole life history. And doing that, I saw that the point where they became very involved in drugs and used drugs to the extent that they, what we call, had a drug use disorder, was when they got involved with the criminal justice system. And that meant that they didn't have regular roles in life like we all have. So like normally most of us that, you know, are involved in alcohol or drugs and have any kind of experimentation with them, eventually we grow out of that because we go to college, we get a job, we get married, we have kids, we have other things in life that fill our lives, and we don't have time for drugs unless some people might use drugs recreationally and control them, but typically most people what we call mature out of hard drug use, like cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine. And that was actually a theory that was supported by all the data up until the time of 1971 when the war on drugs started. And if you look at the trajectory of the war on drugs, it increased, and it also increased incarceration of drug users. And that meant all these people had a criminal record, time in jail, time in prison, and when they came back to society, the problems that they had started using drugs for in the beginning were never taken care of. And now they had worse problems. They no longer fit in society. They were alienated from performing the normal roles that all of us perform to mature.
So how does that, what was happening then, as you said, the war on drugs starting early 70s, how does that compare with what we have now? Because you're still researching drug use now, and we hear daily, if not daily, easily every week, the opioid problem. Where is that continuing? How does that context or that environment and atmosphere then compare with what we have now that is a continuing problem?
Yes, well, actually, the opioid problem was just beginning when I was starting this study in 2008, the study that I wrote the book on. But I just started a study on opioid users, active opioid users, and that includes heroin and prescription pills. I just started that in June. So I just want to compare the differences. When I was looking, because I go out on the streets, I go in bars, I go in people's houses that I meet, drug user networks, I call them. I meet one person, they introduce me to others, and I hang out with them, literally, and talk to them about their lives. And when I was doing this 10 years ago, it was a little difficult to find that first person to build rapport with, and they get to trust me, and then they introduce me to their friends. And so I might find one person, you know, take me a week to find one person, and then two weeks I might have, you know, 5 or 10 interviews that I've done. Now, today, I go out for looking for opioid users and heroin users, and I'll find, you know, 5 or 10 people in a day, and I can have 30 interviews in a week. And it was just devastating to me to see how many people from all walks of life, all ages, were addicted to heroin or opioids, prescription pills. And typically, they go straight from prescription pills to heroin because we stopped that. So you asked me, how does this relate? I think this book is very timely at this point because if we continue with what we've always done, which is what we're doing right now, we're just continuing with what we've always done, then this is going to happen to the next generation and the generation we see now, which are mostly young people going into prescription pills like my brother did and then going into heroin like my brother did. If we continue to put them in jail, coerce them into treatment that lasts for 30 days, and that's it, and do nothing about the problems in their lives that started this, then we are going to have the same thing happen, but at a 4-time scale.
And then the problems that are happening in their lives that you say need to be addressed would be steady work situation that does support, I guess, a family and life, marriage relationships, family relationships. What else in addition to that?
Well, you have to find each individual has different types of problems, and granted, there are some that have some mental health issues that need to be addressed, and drug use, continued drug use, does affect their brain, but that can be reversed, and they can go back to living normal lives again. But for many of these people, they have social problems that get worse after they are stigmatized as being a drug user, and that can be either by going to forced treatment or by going to jail or having a criminal record. So now they have a stigma attached to this, and they don't know how to deal with it, and we're not giving them enough help to deal with the social problems in their life. So I've started a nonprofit called Social Recovery, and what that does is take each individual and look at what is going on in their life and not focus on the drug use as much as focus on their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened with my brother, actually, is that what I started doing that with him. He was in prison, actually, for 30 years. He was a bank robber. He did bank robbery merely to support himself and his drug use because he had no way to have any kind of employment with his record. And so that continually put him back in prison. So when he came out at 58 years old, and there was no way he was going to get a job. In fact, he went to a, a prison release program, went through the whole program, and at the end of the program, he went through every job application that he was given, and no one hired him. And when I asked the director about this, he said, your brother is unemployable. So he went on the street corners with other people that were, you know, half his age to be picked up, you know, by at Home Depot and help out with construction.
Right. Yep.
So I put him in community college at 58 years old. I mean, I didn't put him in. I went through the process of getting him in, and he got in. His life changed within a year. He stopped all heroin use. The only drugs he was using was marijuana and alcohol, and that started decreasing too. And I asked him one time when I talked to him, why are you using so little alcohol now? I mean, you were an alcoholic all your life whenever you were out of jail. And he said, it interferes with me doing my homework.
Huh.
So
you gave him a purpose. Yeah, you gave him a purpose. You gave him a drive. You said, here is something that is a different direction to go, that is more beneficial, is going to be more positive, and you set him on that path. And you're saying that's what we need to be aware of and focus on, rather than, oh, this is a drug user. Now let's see if we can deal with the drug use.
Yes, but I didn't even ask him to stop his alcohol.
Right, right.
I invited him to a bar when I went out. He only had one beer. I had two. You know, because he had another...
Right.
I focused on other things in his life. I didn't say, Harry, why don't you stop drinking so that you don't, you know, get drunk. He realized that if he drank and get drunk, he is not going to be able to finish his homework. And when he gets up in the morning, he doesn't feel very well.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. We're going to have to end our conversation in a moment. You mentioned your program you started called Social Recovery. Is there a way to find that online?
Yeah, well, actually, because I'm also a professor and I have... a study going on, and I'm writing books. I didn't have time really to get it ready. I wanted to get it ready for the book, but we're going to have a website very soon. It'll be called. It's the website will be Social Recovery Inc. INC Incorporated, as soon as I have that, I'll send it to you so you can put it online.
Thank you. And then let me ask just one other question, kind of drive home the point of what you're talking about. When you say you can go out today and you can find five people within a day who have an opioid addiction or other kinds of problems with drugs, we would, this is a general question, which is way too general, but I would venture to say that what you're finding and who you are finding that wants to talk about that and needs to talk about that might surprise those of us who say, well, nobody I know in my circle would be dealing with this.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. I have I have little cards that I give out that look like business cards. And it just asks, you know, if you know anybody that has an opioid problem, I'd like to interview them for a study. And it has my name and number. And, for example, one time I went into a bank and I talked to the banker. He was very nice. And I gave him my card, just said, you know, you never know.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day I got a call from a friend of his who was also a banker.
Wow.
And I interviewed him.
Well, we're hearing about that, and you are studying it, and research will prove what we read in the stories is true. I appreciate your time today. Best of luck to your work, and I hope people hear your message.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Our guest has been Miriam Boeri. She is an associate professor of sociology. She has written a book called Hurt, Chronicles of the Drug War Generation. This is KFRU.